A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Roker Report podcast in association with the Sunderland Community Soup Kitchen. It's Gav, you join us on the back of Sunderland's bore draw at the Stadium of Light with Queen's Park Rangers. It puts an end to our run of six games of we're losing, and yes, we picked up a point and a clean sheet, but it was dire. And joining me to talk all about it is not Chris for once. I did promise Chris he could come on if we won, and we didn't win. So Martin's here.
I've got the honour and the privilege of talking about probably the worst game I've seen for ever, I reckon. I was racking my brains to think of a worse game. And there was a game against Stoke at home in the Premier League when Howard Webb refereed it. Dean Whitehead was playing for Stoke and should have been sent off. But that's all I can remember about that game. I'm sure it was a 0-0 Tuesday night dreary draw. But I tell you, like, that game against QPR, oh my God.
Like, it was
I'm not sure tragic. What we're going to talk about, Gav.
Yeah, well, we'll just talk, mate. I mean, we would generally try and run down the performances and pick out bits and pieces, and there was just nothing to really talk about. So, you know, in that sense, it's difficult. But I'm looking at the stats here in front of us, and we were coming out the ground. We were trying to work out whether we had a shot on target or not. We didn't. Like, nah, obviously, we didn't. But as we're walking out the ground, we're talking about it, and I'm thinking, well, Oshish crossed the ball, which hit the ball, but that's not a shot on target. Dan Neal shot from pretty much the halfway line and it hit the top of the net, but that's not a shot on target. Other than that, I was sitting there thinking, but I can't think of anything we did. Their goalkeeper had the easiest afternoon. You know, they could have put an outfield player in goal. And
they could have put me in goal.
Yeah, that's how poor it was. And in that sense, it kind of feels as bad as losing. That sounds stupid after losing six games. Like, yes, we've addressed it, and I did say on the last pod that me and Chris did, I said that I would take a point, and I'm happy with the point, but the performance was just so bad. It wasn't like we battled for it, and to be honest, I think we're very lucky to be sat here talking about the fact we drew, because I thought Queen's Park Rangers looked pretty good. They had some decent chances. They made subs, which changed the game, and in the end, I think we've got Anthony Patterson to thank for why we've come away with a clean sheet and a point. The rest of the team were shocking, and I heard Mike Dodds' interview after the game, and he sounded more despondent after this one than he had after any of the six we just lost. I know, yeah, he was in charge for four of them, but any of those games. So it's a weird one to try and talk about, because, yeah, we've stopped the run, but at the same time, it was so bad.
Got to take the positive, haven't you? So clean sheet and a point. As you say, like, they had that one in the first half, didn't they, where Ballard passes across the box and the lad pretty much had an open goal, which he managed to strike the ball down the centre of the goal rather than into the corner, and Patterson got to. Then he had that one late in the second half, didn't they, which Patterson made a great save from, but again, the shot was right down his throat, and the lad probably should have done better with that. Sinclair Armstrong came on for the last 20 minutes or so, and he caused absolute mayhem, didn't he?
Yeah, I'm glad Powerful he didn't runner. Start, to be honest, because I was expecting him to start, and I thought, I think that was a bit of a, maybe a faux pas from their coach, because I'm thinking about the problems we've had in defence and the fact we've had to drag a fullback inside to play a centre-half. Yeah. Had Ballard not made the game, it would have been two fullbacks, and I was thinking, perfect opportunity for somebody like that, because he would have tortured us if he'd started. So, yeah, you're right, he came on and caused mayhem.
I think they were probably a little bit cautious in retrospect. I think if you spoke to their manager, honestly, after the game, he probably would have gone for it a bit more. Mm-hmm. I think he's probably expecting a bit more from us. But we were all expecting a bit more from us because we just didn't offer anything. We were slow. We were ponderous. Like, you know, you can go through performances, can't you? But, you know, Hamia strolled around and did absolutely nout. The midfield, you know, Dan Neal apart, I thought it struggled to get into the game at all. You know, you had flashes, didn't you? Mundell had a run or two. Barr had a run or two. You know, but Barr had that run against Jimmy Dunn. It was interesting to see Jimmy Dunn playing fullback. I didn't expect
him to. I actually thought he played okay as well. I thought he played pretty decent. Yeah.
And Clark Salter looked, you know, a good, solid, competent championship centre-half as well. But, like, Barr had that run at Jimmy Dunn. He got one very early on, didn't he, where he probably should have got a free kick. And he got one before half-time where Dunn got booked. And I don't think he ran at him again. And we were just so hesitant to actually go after them and attack them. And it looked as if we were more concerned about not conceding or trying not to concede than actually scoring ourselves, which, you know, you can go into a game with a solid structure and a defensive mindset, but you normally get a couple of shots at least that, you know, skim across the ground from 20 yards and the goalkeeper picks up fairly easily. But we just didn't threaten their goal at all, which was unbelievable, really.
Yeah, it was. The whole mindset and setup seemed pretty negative, I thought. And I was saying to Chris through the week on the last pod, like, if I'm Mike Dodds leading up to this game, I'm telling the players, like, this is our chance now to come together, to put things right, to let's work hard, you know. A bit of siege mentality. I thought coming into this game would have been beneficial. Just try and focus on that more so than the tactics and the setup than we have recently, because it's just felt so disjointed recently, and it's felt like players haven't really known what the jobs are, and I just felt like you missed the opportunity in that sense. I mean, I could be wrong, and that might well have been the way that we kind of built to this game, but there wasn't a reaction if that was the case, and I'm concerned by just mentally how much we've dropped off, because there are good players on the pitch who aren't performing at the minute, and together as a unit, we aren't performing. And I know it's difficult with the amount we've got out. Like, you can't get away from it. I think Dodds himself said it was like 10 players we've got missing at the minute. And after the international break, that should look a lot better. But at the same time, I remember last year when we had loads of injuries and we used that as a tool to motivate ourselves and win games. Like, we might have only had a couple of defenders, but we made do with what we had. We kind of used that to fuel us. And we haven't done that this time round. And yeah, we're missing Clark, we're missing Roberts, we're missing O'Neill, we're missing big players, but I still look at that team which was played, I still look at the team we put out and think we've got enough quality there to at least give QPR a game, and we didn't. We didn't give them a game at all. And they weren't anything special really, but they were the better team and they looked good in patches and had the better chances. So I'm just disappointed more than anything with just the total lack of response. Like I say, we're sat here, yes, we've got a point, and that's a huge positive, but I don't think the players will be feeling like it was earned. I don't think they'll be feeling like it's a big sense of relief. I think they'll just feel exactly as they did going into this one on the back of losing all those games. It kind of, like, it sounds stupid to say this, but it kind of feels like we've lost the way I feel right now. It kind of feels, you know, I don't feel like we've gained anything from getting this result other than obviously the point on the board.
We've gained the point. Look, that could be important. I think it probably will be important come the end of the season, the way things are going. And I think it gives us a platform to go into the international break not carrying over 7 defeats. So I think that would have been a big talking point over next 2 weeks, right? So I think from a mindset point of view, I think it's important to get a point. Look, performance was dire. We know that. We can't get away from that. But I think it does give us that little platform to build on for the next couple of weeks. It takes the pressure off a little bit. In terms of results. And I think, you know, you mentioned the players we've got out, but I think it's only when I actually just wrote them all down before we started recording. And it's only when you kind of see how many players who would be in the first team are out that you kind of go, you know, we are actually down to the bare bones. So we can go through the performance and look, that hasn't been good enough. I don't think Mike Dodds has been good enough as interim manager so far, caretaker in old money. But, like, you've got Niall Huggins, Sirkin, O'Neill, Evans, Clark, Roberts, Roussin, who would probably all be in the first team. You've got Silt, Elise, Embleton, Dak, who was on the bench for the first time. So you've actually got, like, I reckon there's only, if everybody's fit, there's only 4 players who would start. And to me, that's Patterson, Ballard, Neal and Bellingham. and Bellingham would be touch and go.
Hume would probably be in there, wouldn't he?
Oh, sorry, Hume.
Yeah.
So you've got, I reckon, four players who would definitely be in the starting 11 if everybody else is fit, right? So I think you've got to take that into consideration when we're looking at how things are going at the minute, because, you know, you take Clark and Roberts out of that team last season, completely different story. And, you know, we talk about, yeah, we had a few injuries last season and we had to come together and all that sort of stuff. But we had Clark, Roberts and Ahmed fit. And the three of them were the players who we relied on. And you take those three players, or this season, take Clark and Roberts out of any championship team, and it's going to have a massive impact. So, you know, this brings into question, you know, all the players who we're having to bring in and rely upon probably aren't ready to play regular championship football. Like, you look at the likes of Hamir, you look at the likes of Mundell, Hielder, players like that, they've been brought into the club as long-term signings, and we've had to put them into the first team out of necessity to play in week in, week out, and they're just not ready. So, you know, we've got this two-sided coin, I guess, because you've got so many injuries that I don't think you can legislate for having, you know, you've got 10 or 11 players out there who would certainly be, you know, in the 18 come match day.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about QPR, and I thought they looked good. You know, look at the league table, look at the results. They're not a great championship side, but I thought they looked good. You look at the experience of, you know, they had Colback and Hayden in the centre of their midfield, and you look at that experience that they provided compared to what we had. You know, Dan Neil, I think, after the game, talked about our naivety in the game, and, you know, we could have lost that game easy, and especially in the last sort of 10, 15 minutes, we kind of lost the plot a bit. But they've got so much experience. You know, people talk about, you know, the need for experience. I don't necessarily think it's players who have played in the Premier League in terms of having achieved things and won things, but I think it's players who've got 200 games under the belt, who know how to handle games and know how to see games out and know when to sit back and know when to go for it and can pull the teammates in the right direction. I think we're kind of just looking a bit lost on the field. And, you know, we had the youngest championship lineup last week at Southampton. We had Bellingham and Rigg, the combined age of, 34. They're probably the combined age of Colback. You know, we need experience in the side. We need experience for exactly this type of game, because we're relying on people who don't know how to see games out like this, who don't know how to win games like this. And both you and I have been positive about the way that we've approached things. And, you know, I think it is the right way to approach things in terms of, you know, finding young players, developing them, letting them grow and giving them space to grow. We've seen the benefits with people like Hume, you know, who came into the club and didn't play for a year, really. But when they've had that year and get into the team, they grab the place. And that's what you want. But I think it's got to be counterbalanced with some experience. And I think, you know, Mike Dodds broke ranks, didn't he, in midweek, and kind of said similar about the need for experience. And it's not ideal to be relying on so many young players. And, you know, it's now Alex Neil, Tony Mowbray, Michael Beale and Mike Dodds have all come out and pretty much said the same thing. So I think this is all, you know, it's obviously a much bigger point of conversation, but we kind of need to relook a little bit and evolve the approach that we've taken to make sure that when, you know, when we do get injuries, we're not completely all at sea and we're not relying on a 16-year-old and 18-year-old in the centre of midfield, because we're just not going to win championship games like that.
Yeah, I've spoke a little bit about this recently, about how maybe this whole mess, this situation we've kind of manufactured since probably Mowbray left, how I would like to think it will refocus the people behind the scenes, like the owner, the sporting director in particular, and maybe has just acted as a bit of a wake-up call in terms of their approach and the way they do things. Some of you, I actually agree with most of the way they're trying to do things. I think ultimately long term, for Sunderland to be, and for any football club to be successful, there is a way you have to do things, because we've got a place in the food chain and there's only so much you can spend on players that you're not going to recuperate money from, that eventually it hurts you down the line, because, you know, you're looking at it now in the Premier League and you look how strict they're getting with the spending and the way football teams up there are spending money now and the rules which they're now bound to, because with the independent regulator looming, it seems like the Premier League are getting themselves into gear. And like long term, what we're trying to do is the right thing. But when you're in the Championship, it's very different when you're in the Premier League. So when you're in the Premier League, you've got all that big TV money coming in, and that's totally changing the landscape. And you're seeing with teams coming down, we've got it this year with Southampton, Leicester and Leeds, you know, they've got too much for teams to compete with. And
yeah.
I work with a Leeds fan, and I was talking the other day, and he's on about this lad up front. I think he's called Rutter. He's only got a handful of goals. They paid 35 million for him. That's what we're up against. Crackers, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's crackers. So, like, long term, when you're in the top flight, the way we're trying to do things is the right way to do it if you're going to stay there and be competitive over the long term. But to actually get there, there's a different way about it. And we kind of saw this in League One when we recruited players. And there were only, you know, free agents, Danny Bart, Pritchard, Corey Evans, the three off the top of my head, Roberts is another one, where we required some experience from the level above to come down and just add to what we had. And that's what got us promoted in the end, you know, that perfect blend we had mixed with the style of player Lee Johnson had mainly implemented and Alex Neil kind of solidified. And that's what got us promoted. Now we're in the Championship. You're looking at the team that we played at the weekend and you see all the players we've got missing and stuff, and it's glaring what we're missing. And coming up to the summer, all of these games now are going to act as, I guess, just, you know, well, testing, I guess, for us as a club, working out what we need and where we're going to go from here. So, like, on the experience thing, I think the model kind of, and I talked about this on the Twitter space on Friday a little bit, but I think sometimes the model gets talked about and gets thought of as like this robotic plan which, you know, some evil masterminds put in place, and it's gonna be carried out the way they want it to be without any sort of flexibility around it, and it's just like this ruthless kind of machine. It isn't that. I think it'll flex over time. It'll have to change, you know, and coming up the summer when there are a lot of players out of contract looking for new clubs is the time to bring in the experience we need. But it's got to be the right kind of experience. It's got to be the right players. And I know that just sounds like a very obvious thing to say, but the summer just gone, we signed, like, Bradley Dack is probably the only experienced signing we made. And he wasn't the right signing. That wasn't what we needed. We didn't need a player like that. He hasn't played. You know what I mean? So it wasn't the right... Like, when we go out this summer, we've got to be looking at a class of player who's going to get us out this division next season. Because everybody now is looking at this and saying, right, okay, we've had 2 years now to mould this. This summer, we've got to really make a fist of it. And the players we bring in now have got to be good enough to get something out of the Championship. And maybe all of this that we've had to kind of go through in the last few months has helped them refocus on that. Because there was probably a period where they were looking at it and thinking, like, everything they did was working and everything that they touched turned to gold. And it has been proven it hasn't, because you're bang on what you said before. There's lads being thrown in now who just simply aren't ready. And they were never meant to be ready, but because of circumstances, they're playing. Players, you know, you kind of look at Styles, who was signed probably just to be a utility player, hasn't really shown anything yet in the games he's played. And you look at Oshish, who, you know, I was really championing to get into the team, but and he might still come good, but, like, generally over the season hasn't played much. And I think they were probably looking at him to play a lot more than he has. Pembele has been nowhere near. And yes, he's on the back of a bad injury, but they're holding him back for some reason. So, you know, you look at the business we've done recently and it hasn't been particularly good. So all of this added together, kind of, like I said before, means that this summer is very important.
Massively important. I think, you know, you're right, we need to sign players who are ready for the first team, who are going to come in and improve the first team, mm-hmm. rather than bolster the squad. You know, I think the signs that we made in January bolster the squad. And look, I think if you look at QPR, you've got Mundell, Hielder and Styles there. If they weren't signed, I'm not sure who we would have played. So, you know, in some terms, they've added to the squad. They've come in and out of default, they've become first team players automatically, haven't they? But I think the experience thing stretches beyond the playing squad as well. I think it's where we need an experienced head coach. Because if we haven't got that experience in great quantities off the field, we're really going to struggle. I think that's what's showing now. We've got a really inexperienced squad. And look, I don't want to go back to the Tony Mowbray days with rose-tinted glasses. I look back on those days with rose-tinted glasses. because, you know, things weren't great towards the end under Mowbray, but he had the experience that the players could rely on and tap into, and he could settle them down and, you know, pull them together and all that sort of stuff because he'd been there and done it. And Dodds hasn't. So Dodds is learning on the job as much as the players are. And I think, you know, that bit is where we're going wrong, especially at the minute. So, you know, the recruitment for experience has got to go beyond the field in the summer. And obviously with the new manager who we get, they'll obviously be working on, well, you'd hope they're working on that in the background and trying to figure out who that's going to be and having conversations. But we need somebody who's going to come in and lead that group, because we're not, you know, I'm sure we will sign some experienced players, but I don't think we're going to sign 7 or 8 experienced players. I think we'll maybe sign 2, 3 if we're lucky, probably free transfers or low transfer fees, who can come in and add some experience to that starting 11. But we're going to need an experienced head coach, I think, for this to work. You're going to need somebody who can be a figurehead, who the players can look at and go, well, he's been there and done that, and he knows what he's talking about, and can really lead that group and protect that group and take the pressure off that group, because we haven't got that on or off the field at the minute. And that's where, you know, I'm actually as concerned about that going into the summer as I am about the recruitment of a few experienced players, because I'm not sure we'll go down that route. But I, you know, firmly believe that we need to.
Yeah, I've kind of toyed on that a little bit, and I'm not sure myself. At times I've felt like, well, they're probably going to go with probably a foreign coach. Like, I just think that's something they haven't done yet. And given the way they work, if you bring in, let's say, someone who's coached in the German system, where this is very normal, head coaches are everywhere, you know, every club kind of works in a similar model the way we do. If you look at that, then you would kind of point to that and think, well, that's possible. And then you see some of the managers who came to even the Championship this season and have done quite well from clubs like that. You look at the QPR manager, Sif Wenters.
Yeah.
I think he came from the Swedish league. Danny Rohl, who has really turned them around. They're still down there struggling, but, I mean, they look dead and buried, and he's come in and they've totally changed round at Sheff Wed. So they're out there, but it's whether that's what Sunderland need right now is the big thing. Like, are we going to go that route, or are we going to do what you've said, which is bring in someone with experience? And my worry with that kind of appointment is that there are not going to be that many managers out there willing to come to Sunderland and just give up all of the privilege you get as a manager to be a head coach. Like, how many experienced coaches are going to want to work in the way that we're asking our head coach to work? Because in the end, Mowbray didn't like it. In the end, Alex Neil didn't like it. It is a very different way of working, and we've got to go out there and find someone who's going to be happy to work in that system. And when you talk about experience, like, to me, I'm setting my sights quite high, and I think there's no reason why, in a normal world, why Sunderland couldn't go and get like a really top caliber, low end Premier League, top end Championship standard manager like a Steve Cooper, who I think would probably end up back in the Premier League, but somebody like that is going to be a name which the fans are going to keep mentioning because he did such a good job at Forest. But then I caveat that with the way we work. Like, you know,
I don't think those two things are mutually exclusive, though. You could have somebody from overseas who's, you know, won a few promotions, got into the Bundesliga or whatever.
Yeah.
Who's
yeah.
an experienced coach who's used to working in that system. But also it would be interesting to really know how much the day to day of being head coach of Sunderland differs from being a manager of another Championship club, right? I was listening to Alex Neil speaking this week, and basically he was saying about transfers, the way that we worked at Sunderland was slightly different, but wasn't that different to how we worked at Preston and Norwich and at Stoke. It's not me just signing players, it's a group of us looking at players, deciding how we go about things and then doing the deals. And it's more the, I guess, the, you know, that model that we've talked about, but it's more the model that we've got rather than the actual role of head coach. I think that's probably the challenging thing for prospective managers coming into the role. And if we do see a slight I think we will see that evolve. We've got to. It's that model's got to grow as we grow. That model's got to progress as we progress. So I think we will see a slight shift in that during the summer. And if a manager can come in and is told, yes, look, we're not going to spend a great deal of money on players over 25 or 26 or whatever they're putting the mark at, but we'll bring in 3 or 4 on decent salaries. It's a different kind of proposition, isn't it? You mentioned Steve Koopman. You know, we're not going to delve into too many individual names. But like, I don't see that being unattainable for us. It shouldn't be unattainable for us. Like, that should be, like, normally, that should be a manager who we actually have a really good chance of getting. You know, yes, he's been in the Premier League, but he hasn't been in the Premier League for that long. He hasn't been at the top of the Premier League. He's got a club up. It's working in a similar sort of structure to how we work. So to me, that kind of is logical, but whether he does, whether he has his sights set higher than us or not, we don't know. But like, is that a good fit? I think it probably is. And the other question is, when do we make that change? And I think, you know, the way this season's going, we're probably better off hanging on till the summer, giving the new fella a completely clean sheet, free run at it for a few weeks of pre-season training and friendlies and time to build a squad, time to get his coaching across, rather than chucking somebody else into the deep end again. And even if we made a change now with an international break, you've got 2 weeks until the next game and we've got a lot of fixtures in, you know, back-to-back. And you could bring somebody in now who could be the perfect manager for us long-term. But if we stuff up the next 6 or 7 games, they're going to be tainted already, aren't they?
Yeah.
So it's like, we're probably better off hanging on till the summer. I think that's right, but it kind of just feels as if we're in a bit of a holding pattern at the minute, and we're just seeing the season out, and we're just keeping our fingers crossed that we don't, and I don't think we will get dragged into anything, but we're just keeping our fingers crossed that we're not going to get dragged into anything too serious. See the season out, and almost start again as soon as that last game of the season's over. But as a fan, we don't want to just be seeing games out and seeing the rest of the season out. You know, what is it, 7 or 8 games of the season left? It's an awful lot of football to be played. And it's like, you're just looking at the end of the season. I honestly, I can't wait for it to be finished, because you just want to get over. I want to get on with pre-season. I want to get on with a new manager, get some new signings in. And that's not a great place for us to be as fans. Like, you should be looking forward to the game. You should be excited. Like last season, this time last season, I think we were just starting to go on a decent run, or maybe a few weeks' time. I think it was Easter, wasn't it? The West Brom game.
Yeah.
And like, you're kind of looking forward to the game, and you're excited about the games, and you're building up a bit of momentum going at the end of the season. It's just kind of petering out before our eyes, and it's not a great place for us to be in, to be perfectly honest.
No, and I kind of wonder, you know, with obviously the decision to give Dodds the job till the end of the season, I think spelled out to everyone, the players included, that we're kind of writing this season off, and that's bound to have had an impact. But I do worry about kind of the fact that the players are still hearing the same voices that they've heard for a couple of years now. And coming away from this, I think reputationally, it's damaged Mike Dodds as a coach, because you think of how well thought of he was when Beale was appointed, after he managed us to the 2 wins against Leeds and West Brom, kind of rescued his reputation a little bit off the back of the first time round that he did it and it went so badly wrong. And then he's come in this time and has spoken awful lot, if I'm honest. I see the length of his press conferences, and he's sitting there for 40 minutes talking to the press, and the post-match interviews he has to do, obviously, as a coach, where he's not really being truly honest. Like, I think this is the first time after this game is the first time I've heard him say something where I believe what he's saying, what's coming out of his mouth, where he's not kind of masking the truth. He was seriously pissed off with the performance, and for the first time he talked about it. And in recent weeks he hasn't done that. But I think just all of this combined with the bad performances and everything, reputationally it's done damage, not just to him, but to the rest of the coaching team. And I wonder, with the summer coming up, whether that's something we should be looking at too, whether we should be looking at making changes, not just to the head coach, but the rest of the staff, because we need to refocus. Like, I can't stress this enough. This summer has to be bang on, like everything. Every decision we make has to be bang on, because everybody's now expecting this team to challenge for promotion next season. And for that to happen, everybody's got to be pointing in the same direction. And, you know, we haven't appointed a head coach yet. The fact that we'll probably lose Jack Clark, our best player, is going to have an impact. And I just think that appointing somebody who, fans feel comfortable can actually do the job they've been appointed for, which is to get us promoted, will soften that blow, I think. So if it was, we keep mentioning Steve Cooper because he's just an obvious name to pluck out of thin air. But if it was someone like that, I think that would soften the blow because we know we're losing Clark. We know that there's going to be a lot of change and stuff. But they then appoint somebody with a track record of playing good football, who's got a team promoted out of this league, was loved by the fans of the last club he was at. Like, all of these things combined. I think that would soften the blow of the kind of turmoil we're going to feel at the end of this season and the turmoil we're feeling right now. But you're right with what you said before. It's difficult watching the games. Like, everybody I spoke to going to the match, or either at the match, and just really didn't fancy it, didn't want to be there. Like, we kind of went out of this mad sense of loyalty we all have when we're Sunderland fans, the way we just can't help but go along and watch the match. But everybody is feeling like the season's done and over with, and it's not really. Like, you look at the table, and I think we're probably going to be fine, but, you know, Huddersfield are on 39 points, we're on 48. We're 9 points above the drop zone with 8 games left. I think that should be enough, but at the same time, it's a worry, and mentally everyone's switching off at the time when we need them really to get a couple of wins just to calm things down.
Yeah.
That's the worry coming out of this for me. I know you said before, you know, the point kind of lets us breathe a little bit, and it does to an extent, but I don't know whether it lets us breathe enough. And I think after the international break, I'm just praying we see a reaction because, oh God, we need it, don't we? We need to just... one win, one good performance would really, really lift the mood at the minute. And
no,
we're going to have to wait at least 2 weeks to... We're going to have to wait at least 2 weeks to bloody get there.
I think it's probably a good break to have with the timing of it. And, you know, hopefully in 2 weeks' time, we've got two or three players back from injury as well. Like, 09 will be back after his suspension, won't he?
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully Ballard is able to navigate international duty without getting injured, because that's what happened last year, wasn't it?
He shouldn't go there. I don't get that, by the way. If he's nursing a knock...
He didn't look fit against QPR, man.
No.
I'm not sure when we're expecting Robertson Clark to come back, but I don't think it was...
I think
that
they're
much
a little bit later
on.
I think Elise and Evans are the closest to
Evans
return.
We could see, yeah. Could see them back in the squad. Dak was obviously on the bench against QPR, so he must be nearing fitness. And, you know, whatever we think about Dak, I'm sure he would add something to the side at the minute. But look, I think this break's come at the right time, and hopefully we can just kind of go into the next couple of weeks. He can pull them together a bit, and we can go into that last run of fixtures with a little bit more focus than we seem to have had, because we were just all over the place against QPR. And you know, I think you're right. Again, it's interesting with the coaching staff, isn't it? Because Beale was the first manager I can ever remember coming into a club by himself. And I just don't think that's right. I don't think that's actually a healthy thing to do. Can you imagine if you were going into that sort of role?
You just
plummeted in by yourself, and everybody else was already there and had things set up and had their ways of working. And like we need somebody to come in who's a figurehead, who can, you know, and I've talked about this before, but, you know, I don't give a toss if it's head coach or manager that we call it, but the manager of Sunderland has to manage the fans and the club as well as the players. It's a big role. You've got to bring everybody together. You've got to manage the whole thing, and it needs a big personality to do it. It needs somebody who can instantly get some respect and starts off with some respect. And, you know, again, I do think you're right in terms of the type of coach that we'll be looking for. Probably somebody from over. Haven't said. I was going to say probably somebody from overseas, like you mentioned earlier. But like, we've been really dull with our managerial recruitment. It's been really predictable. But we need somebody who is a figurehead, who's going to come in and instantly get some respect. And we need to let that manager bring in his assistant and even a coach with him, to add some different voices into that mix. You know, I remember I had a chat with Viv Busby, who was Dennis Smith's assistant manager back in the late 80s, early 90s. And he lost his job. Dennis Smith sacked him and replaced him with Martin Crosby, probably about 6 months before Dennis Smith got sacked. And Viv was telling me and Chris, you know, that was sometimes you need to freshen things up. And if you can't freshen up with a change of the playing staff, you need to freshen up with change of coaches. And you can understand why, in retrospect, why Dennis Smith got rid of him. Because something needed freshened up, something needed changing. And, you know, off the field at present, Mike Dodds and Proctor have been the primary coaches for the past, since Lee Johnson left, really.
They were probably brought in around the same time as Johnson. Well, certainly Dodds was, and I think Proctor was already in the club.
I think Dodds had a role with younger players, didn't he, initially? Then he got kind of promoted when Johnson and his assistant left. But, you know, we've had the same voices now for, two and a half seasons?
Yeah.
And I think that's another thing that we need to consider. So hopefully the new head coach, new manager, will be able to bring in at least one, if not two, people with him.
Yeah.
To freshen that up. But like, as you say, there's an awful lot of things sorted out during the summer. And I think this season's probably dampened expectations for next season a little bit, hasn't it? But we do need to get the big decisions right in the summer. And I guess the question is whether we're confident of that happening. And I think it's a toss a coin moment, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it is. It is. You know what? We've done a really good job today, by the way, of just avoiding the game.
Not talking about the match.
Which I'm sure people are probably glad of, given how shit it was. But I think all of these things, all of these topics are whirring around. And it's something Chris mentioned on the last pod, really, is that, you know, with not appointing a new head coach immediately, it's brought all of these things into question. And we're going to constantly be asking the same questions about who's the next manager going to be, what we're going to do in the summer, who are we going to sign, what's the recruitment policy going to be. All these things now are whirring around because they wrote the season off when they done that. When they said, we aren't appointing somebody to replace Michael Beale.
Yeah.
They wrote the season off. They said it was over. That they might as well have come out and said, the season's over. We're going to coast until the summer and we're going to start again. And that's why we're all still sat, like, after games, picking apart things, but also looking at further ahead and trying to look at what we're going to do in the coming months once the actual season's over with and we've got a plan for next year.
Well, we need to be ready to go as soon as that last game of the season's finished. We need to be ready to go with a new manager and new coaching team, because you've got players' contracts coming up for renewal. You've got players who are going to be available to sign. You know, we need to be starting for next season as soon as that final whistle goes on the last day of the season.
Yeah.
We need it. You know, you'd ideally have the new manager announced before that last game of the season, taking the game in from the stands, and he takes control as soon as that game's finished, because we cannot afford to lose a second in preparation for next season. So, you know, hopefully this buys them, it has bought them some time already to identify and figure out who that next fella is, but we need to be acting quickly and getting them in and getting ready for next season at the earliest opportunity, because, you know, we've made so many mistakes from the final whistle against Luton the Kenilworth Road. We've made so many mistakes this season since then, and we cannot afford to repeat them next season.
No. Right, well, the international break's coming up, so there's no game next week, but we might drop in a little, I don't know, maybe a little Q&A pod or something at some point. I think it would be a good chance to do that, given we've spent most of today actually covering off things around the club, but it would be good to maybe do a Q&A pod. So if you follow Roto Report on Twitter, make sure you keep an eye out for a tweet going out at some point during the week, I'm sure, where I ask for questions and you can all bang them in. And whoever is on, whether it's me, Martin, Chris, or all three of us, we will be sure to chat all about them. Cheers, Martin. Thanks for joining us, mate. Cheers for helping us forget the game, because Jesus, yeah. And we'll catch you all later.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.